Porgy and Bess, the classic American folk opera about life and love in an African-American fishing community, was a great dream for its collaborators, composers George and Ira Gershwin, and author DuBose Hayward, who wrote the 1925 novel, Porgy. But it wasn't as successful as they had hoped when it premiered in 1935. So now, after 76 years, the Gershwin and Hayward Trusts are reviving Porgy and Bess in a new adaptation. It's now in previews at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with plans to move it to Broadway in December. Andrea Shea of member station WBUR has been following the project's evolution since April.
Messing with a classic will always make people mad. The creative team working on the new Porgy and Bess knew that from the get-go. Writer Susan Laurie Parks and musical adapter Deirdre Murray recall long hours in windowless rooms sweating over the monumental task they agreed to take on.
We were saying, what are we doing? What are we doing? And that's what you'd say. You said, I'm modernizing without disturbing.
Yes.
I think I'm disturbing some things.
Before their adaptation even reached an audience, musical theater legend Stephen Sondheim sent a letter to the editor of the New York Times accusing the new Porgy and Bess team of arrogance and dishonoring the creator's intentions. But the opera's been in flux since its very first performance. The story goes that after opening night, George Gershwin and his collaborators pace through Boston Common, arguing over cuts to their four-hour work. Robert Kimball, friend of Ira Gershwin and longtime artistic advisor to the Gershwin estate, says they probably would have kept at it had they lived.
Because two of the creators died so very soon after the premiere in 35, George died in 1937 and DuBose in 1940, we really don't know what they would have done with the piece. Most operas go through changes from city to city, from year to year. There would have been changes here as well.
That's not to say the opera hasn't been done since. There have been plenty of performances and a film. But the Gershwin and Hayward estates turned to Tony Award-winning director Diane Paulus to bring the work back to the stage in a new way. The artistic director at the American Repertory Theater recalls watching a Metropolitan Opera production of Porgy and Bess.
And I remember sitting there in that fancy opera house thinking, this is a great piece of musical theater. And not musical theater the way we tend to think, you know, song and dance and light and entertainment, but deeply moving, powerful music, characters, drama, emotion, catharsis.
It was the story, though, that attracted most of Paulus's attention. She felt the narrative needed clarification. The plot still unfolds in a fictitious neighborhood called Catfish Row. It's still set around 1920. But baritone Philip Boykin, who sung the role of Crown many times before, says letting him talk more allows his character to express more.
In the operas, usually, the focus is mainly on the voice. In this production, the focus is really on allowing the audience to see these as real people and to go deeper into the characters.
There's the woman I'm looking for. Why you ain't coming here and saying hello to your man?
You ain't her man.
It's sure time I was coming back for you, sweetheart.
At a workshop in May in New York, Diane Paulus introduced the cast to her notion that the original libretto would be fleshed out, or mined, as she says, to make the update more like a piece of musical theater or a play than an opera. Audra McDonald says she learned more about her character, Bess, as Paulus and Parks laid out more of the backstory.
Okay, at this moment, they're going through withdrawal, cocaine withdrawal. At this moment, someone has just been murdered. At this moment, someone is promising to murder someone. I mean, all these things, when we put them into a very realistic context, the songs come even more alive.
And here, 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 here.
is still a beautiful drug addict, torn between her brutish boyfriend, Crown, and her growing love for the charming disabled beggar, Porgy. But Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Susan Laurie Parks, who was hired to open the script, had lots of questions about what made these characters tick. For instance, the opera never explains why Porgy is disabled, so Parks turned to the source.
In the book, you go to the original novel, the Bose Hayward's novel, and you realize he's crippled from birth. So we put in the line, crippled from birth. I'm crippled from birth, God made me to be lonely. That's in the show. What does that mean to marry those two things together? A piece of information with the statement, God made me to be lonely, which was in the original. We put them together, and suddenly here's a man who's having a conversation with God, which is from before the day I was born. You made me to be lonely. And into my life comes the most beautiful, cool, sexiest, most awesome chick. And I fall in love with her.
To make that more believable, Parks and her collaborators made a controversial decision to eliminate one of the opera's key plot devices. In the original, Porgy makes his way around town in a goat cart. Here, he walks with a cane. The creative team also added text to address a longtime criticism of the opera, that it's racist. Parks points to the song, I Got Plenty of Nothing.
That's the song that people, folks go, ah, man, that's a racist song, you know. It's basically the happy darky with the empty pockets song.
That didn't bother Parks as much as her feeling that the song didn't work dramatically. So she added dialogue to set it up.
So when Porgy comes out of the house, he says,
good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Porgy.
He's just been in the house with Bess. So he comes out of the house with a big smile on his face, and they say, what you been up to? And he's like,
nothing.
They all start laughing. A bunch of guys on stage are all laughing. And he starts singing.
I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me.
At rehearsals earlier this month, Parks and the rest of the team said it's important to remember that the opera's creators stipulated it would always be performed by an all-black cast. And to this day, their estates hold firm to that requirement. Norm Lewis, who plays Porgy, points out the opera's first national tour played a role in desegregating, briefly, the National Theater in Washington, D.C. The original Porgy, Todd Duncan, refused to go on stage unless all seats were open to all colors for all performances.
And this was in the late 1930s, early 40s. And this was before civil rights actually really started. So for him to have that sort of wherewithal and power and strength and courage to do something like that was a major milestone.
Throughout the entire process, director Diane Paulus especially felt George Gershwin's presence.
Every time in rehearsal, you know, when a music stand falls down or a book falls off and something crashes, you know, we're always like, there's Gershwin. You know, I think he's in the room with us all the time. And actually, I think what makes it such a powerful classic is that you do feel like you're in dialogue with what they gave us 76 years ago, that we are still working on and still mining beat by beat, word for word, note by note.
And writer Susan Laurie Parks has this clarification for what the cast calls the purists out there.
We haven't touched the opera, actually. What we did is, you know, on your computer, you push duplicate. We're making another show. We're not saying this will replace the original brilliant opera called Porgy and Bess. And again, the Gershwins asked us to.
Of course, the Gershwin and Hayward estates stand to earn royalties on the new production of what's now called the Gershwins' Porgy and Bess. But more importantly, they say, they want the classic tale to reach 21st century audiences who don't usually go to the opera house and maybe have only heard the song Summertime sung by a contestant on American Idol. For NPR News, I'm Andrea Shea in Boston.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm John Idstead.